You are listening to the Cycling Podcast at the Giro d'Italia in association with Rafa, the fastest clothing in the world tour, the home of cycling with character. Ride and watch with Rafa in 2019 as they partner with EF Education First and Canyon SRAM. Today we are in Courmayeur.
Cozze ci tene, cozze, cozze vicine, non spigudeci ora, non spigudeci ora. Cozze ci tene, cozze, cozze vicine, non spigudeci ora, se non mangiano le femmine.
How good is Canapaz at the moment? He looks like he's on quite a good level.
He's flying. He's really strong, and maybe it's like also then it's a little bit different than we come like 2,000 meters. You're a little bit suffering, but yeah, we try the best.
Is this a situation that you're not unhappy about, the current situation with Carapaz taking the jersey today?
I don't know.
Well, he doesn't know. Uncertainty. That was Adi Engels, the sports director at Jumbo Visma, Primož Roglič's sports director, admitting that he doesn't know what it means for his man's hopes of winning the Giro, the fact that Richard Carapaz from Movistar now has the pink jersey. And who was that we heard from first, Lionel?
Well, that was Rafał Majka, who was in the front group, or the chase group behind Richard Carapaz, and his verdict is, well, pretty clear. Carapaz of Movistar is flying, and he's flown into the pink jersey, and he's got it now by just 7 seconds, but he's turned the race on its head and made a bit of a mockery of some of the things I was saying in last night's episode.
But, well, we didn't talk about Carapaz an awful lot last night, did we, Daniel? You're with us as well.
Most importantly, let's drill down into the important information. Where are we, Lionel, and what are we drinking?
Well, we're in Courmayeur. We're being overlooked by some quite impressive...
We're not being overlooked. We are looking... Because mountains can't really see, can they?
We're 1,255 metres above sea level. I'm drinking some Blanc de Morger, which is the wine produced from the highest vineyards in Europe. Very apt, because Richard Carapaz is the highest leader of the Giro d'Italia ever, as in he was born at the highest altitude, 2,980 metres. However, there's been a leader of a Grand Tour born even higher. Who was it? This is going to take all night, isn't it? We're going to have to crack on.
Give us an old...
Darwin Atapuma.
Darwin Atapuma, even higher.
Anyway, sorry, Charles. That was a kind of upset your flow there.
I did upset the flow. I missed my cue there to introduce a new nickname for the podcast. Addy the Engels. Addy the Engels.
You're going to have to explain this one, Richard.
Not really. I mean, Primož Roglič, ski jumper. He used to be a ski jumper. And
breaking news.
Famous ski jumper Eddie the Eagle. And it just struck me, it's been playing on my mind the last few days, that Addy Engels sounds almost like Eddie Eagle. So Addy the Engels.
That's Daniel, do you have a verdict on this?
Well, says, did Primož jump the shark today? I stole that from someone off Twitter. That was good, wasn't it? Ski jump the shark, of course.
Very good. Has Vincenzo invited Primož to see his trophies?
No, and could Primož
show him his ski jump trophies?
Well, this whole beef escalated a bit over, in the hours subsequent to the finish yesterday, when we found out that not only did Nibali make the comment about, you know, Roglic taking a picture by his trophies, but he also flicked him the bird yesterday after the stage, allegedly. But he was quite conciliatory after today's stage. His Bahrain Merida director sportif, Paolo Slongo, was less conciliatory. He was asked whether Roglic had done more work today. He said, well, Carapaz was still gaining when Roglic was on the front. So, yeah, he kind of sat at the front for a bit.
Roglic said that apparently they kind of made up a bit after the stage as well. They shook hands after dope control.
I think there was a peacemaker. Gregor Bole is a Slovenian rider who rides for Nibali's team, and I saw him deep in conversation with Roglic this morning at the start.
There was also a fist bump moment that you spotted earlier on today, Richard. Who was that between? That looked like there was some...
Landa and Nibali. They had a conversation right at the front, so it wasn't exactly discreet. And then they fist bump. It was almost like, let's fist bump and see, you know, people will make gifs out of it and it'll become a meme. I don't know what that is, but it'll be, you know, because the whole stage was broadcast, so everyone would see that, and people will wonder. But you know, it did hint at maybe some kind of alliance between Movistar and Barry Morita against Roglic, but didn't really see anything like that transpire. We did see in the final selection of the top riders that Nibali still had a teammate, and obviously Movistar still had a couple of riders there, and Roglic was quite isolated. But I think Jumbo Visma have done really well actually the last couple of days. Are we going to get a tail of the tapper at all?
I mean, we've got into the meat of this. Well, I mean, it's been quite a challenge the last 3 days. The tail of the tapper, because after a week or so of not very much happening in this Giro, the last 3 days have been absolutely fantastic entertainment. A lot has happened. There have been riders moving up, riders moving down. Today was probably the most conventional of these last three, wasn't it? Because they set off like a rocket from
It's tough pronunciation in the Val d'Aosta where we are at the moment, because French and Italian are taught equally in the schools, but there's a definite preference for Italian in everyday sort of usage. But the language of culture in the Val d'Aosta is France, and you know, we're a cultured podcast, so you should do the whole thing in French.
The whole thing in French. Well, we heard early on, I mean, there was some big names going up the road early on, wasn't there? Or there was certainly everyone was very, very alert to any danger early on. But all of the real action came in the back half of the race, over the big climb, the Colle San Carlo. And that was where Canapaz went clear and got quite a big gap quite quickly. It was very quickly 30 seconds and behind. They didn't really know what to do, did they? Nibali, Roglic, they took turns, they cooperated a bit in terms of trying to bring it back. But we really saw a proper shake-up in who the best climbers are. There was no one up there who doesn't deserve to be up there, basically. We've seen these riders climb up the GC. Richard Carapaz, of course, won the stage and took the pink jersey from Jan Polans, who lost quite a bit of time, nearly 7 minutes in the end, I think, 7:20. The other big loser today, after I'd bigged him up and talked about how dangerous it was to let Ilnur Zakarin back into the picture, he was in that group as well, 7:20 down. Bauke Mollema lost 4 minutes to Canapaz, so the riders who really put their noses in the wind yesterday suffered a bit today. Mikel Landa, you know, looked good, but was really trumped by his teammate Carapaz. And Carapaz's lead is now 7 seconds. Vincenzo Nibali is at 1:47. Rafał Majka has moved up to fourth place, 2:10. And then Landa now at 2:50. So the GC is, well, it's looking like it's going to be that kind of five-way battle. And Simon Yates gained a little bit with a good move on the final climb. Not only the good move, but he was with Joe Dombrowski, who'd been in the early break and then had been with the GC riders and been dropped. And then Yates and Dombrowski got back up to them, and then Yates clipped off and gained a little bit of time. Not enough to be significant, really, but enough to prove, you know, a bit of a morale boost, I'd say.
In a way, he's in a tricky position now, isn't he? Because he's not far enough down to really be led off the leash, but he's too far away for it to be sort of realistic to think about threatening Carapaz and Roglic, for the moment at least. He needs something else to go in his favour and something to go wrong for them.
But he's up to ninth, and you've got to think that Polans will possibly slip down, so he may gain a place there, and then he's right back in the mix. You know, Mollema might struggle in the really big mountain stages to come. Sivakov looks really good, doesn't he, now lying in eighth place. So it's all kind of, you know, gathering together at the top, but the race now is very much between Carapaz and Movistar, and they have multiple riders, don't they? And Roglic, whose team are making a good fist of helping him wherever they can.
The fastest clothing in the World Tour, the home of cycling with character. Ride and watch with Rafa in 2019 as they partner with EF Education First and Canyons Run.
Big thank you to Rafa, our headline sponsor, who have supported the podcast since 2016 and enable us to cover the Giro and the other Grand Tours. Rafa have launched their Aero range of clothing, which has been developed in the wind tunnel, looking at all the things that make clothing go faster. The range includes an Aero jersey for men and women, Aero suits for men and women, and pro team bib shorts. These garments are exactly the same as those being worn by the EF Education First team in this Giro d'Italia. Perhaps that Aero suit or Aero kit enabled Joe Dombrowski to catch up back up with the leading group today, Lionel. But Rafa's aero range has been developed for years to save you seconds. Check out the full range on rafa.cc. And while we're talking about Rafa, I should mention a special event that's coming up on June the 18th in London, Secrets of the Pro Peloton. Now, this is an event that's being organised by Rafa and Simon Mottram, chief executive and founder of Rafa. It raises money for Ambitious About Autism, a very good cause that's supported by Rafa and Simon Mottram, has been for many years. I'll be chairing this event with Lionel and four guests, including a current World Tour pro, a coaching colossus, and a World Tour team manager. The idea is that things are going to be said at this event that people will not have heard before. The secrets of the pro peloton will be told. There'll be no phones, no journalists, it says here, so I don't know if that applies to us. I don't know. But that's at 7 p.m. at White City House in London on June the 18th. Go to rafa.cc for tickets. If you search secrets of the pro peloton and Rafa, it'll take you to the page to get tickets for that event on June the 18th. Well, we've mentioned that Jumbo-Visma have really, the last couple of days, taken responsibility for the race as if they had the pink jersey. And that's what makes what's happened so intriguing, really, because now Movistar have the jersey. And will they, therefore, be the team that takes responsibility and maybe take some of the workload off Jumbo-Visma? Does what happened with Carapaz taking the jersey actually possibly play into Roglic's hands a little bit? I went and spoke to Adi the Engels at the finish, but before that, at the start today, you spoke to one of his teammates,
Kern Bauman, who was pretty impressive in the work he did today for Primoz Roglic.
Actually, it has not like really a plan for the stages like today. It's going to be really tough, and everybody will ride on their own position. Yeah, hopefully one of us can survive the climbs until like the last hard climb there, until the area has maybe some support then from us, and then it's up to Primoz himself.
And what specifically has been said? How much have you talked about Movistar, Carapaz and Landa, and how are you going to deal with them?
They are dangerous for us, dangerous duo, but still if they attack, it's up to Primoz and not up to the domestics. They are way too strong for us. Yeah, Primoz has to deal with them by themselves.
See Nibali's comments last night about Primoz, if he wants to see his trophy cabinet, he's welcome.
Yeah, we talk about a little bit on the bus. Yeah, in the end, I think Primoz knows what he is doing. I think he also had a lot of trophies the last 1.5 years, so I think he doesn't think so much about it, I think.
Is this a situation that you're not unhappy about, the current situation with Carapaz taking the jersey today?
I don't know. I don't know. It's no, honestly, I mean, it's a little bit in between. On one end, yes, you can say it's, I mean, the gap of course is really small. So on one end, you can say it's still a good position. But on the other hand, it's also I've seen a very strong Carapaz not only today but also the days already before. He's now in front of him, so we have to make up time.
We've seen the last couple of days Jumbo-Visma really sort of acted as if, you know, they've had the pink jersey in a way, they've taken responsibility for the race. I guess the onus for that will shift on to Movistar tomorrow.
Yes. Yes.
Which will help, I guess.
Yes. I mean, that's what I expect. Of course, till now, UAE was in the pink jersey, and I think also they knew more or less that every day they can be in pink would be great, but one day would come to lose it. The day to Pinerolo, we waited really long, but also did the others. So in the end, we had to start chasing, and then we also thought for yesterday and today that we shouldn't wait that long anymore. Just be in control, try to do it as good as possible, take responsibility, and they did it in a really good way. And but now we have a different team in the lead, a team with a rider in the pink jersey who is able to win this Giro. So I think the situation will change a bit now.
And Carapaz, I'm guessing from some of your answers that he's surprised you. You wouldn't necessarily have identified him as a favourite coming into the Giro.
Not as one of the main favorites, but for sure as one of Movistar also started here with Landa as their main guy, but always knowing that Carapaz would be close. And and then you never know in the situation how things evolve. Maybe if Landa would have made the move that Carapaz did today, he would maybe be in the same position. So, but no, for sure one of the really dangerous guys, and with a team like Movistar, always dangerous and important rivals, of course.
Surely it's still advantage Roglic, though. No, I know it's a long way off, but the time trial in Verona is going to favour him over Carapaz. No, I mean Carapaz.
I don't think it's advantage Roglic in the sense that we've had in the last two mountain stages, Carapaz has gained how much over almost 4 minutes. You have to imagine that he'll carry on gaining time, if not on all of the mountain stages, then on some of them. Plus, he's got Mikel Landa up his sleeve. And, you know, I think it would have been hard for Landa to attack today. I think it was perfect in a way that he was able to just kind of sit in and not really do anything. Who knows, maybe even recovered a little bit today. They don't need to do anything, I would suggest, tomorrow, although I think it will be a lively finale, sort of Tour of Lombardy-style finale. I think it's advantage them, don't you, Rich?
Well, yeah, I thought Landa looked a little bit tired today, you know, just after Carapaz had gone away. And even before that, when Nibali was testing the water a little bit, Landa was quite slow to respond. And that just maybe, because while he's there, you know, both Roglic and Nibali are perhaps, you know, reluctant to commit fully to chasing Carapaz with Landa sitting there ready to attack. But with perhaps Landa struggling a little bit, it's not quite so strong a card, Landa. But, you know, he was maybe paying for the efforts he made yesterday. But, you know, speaking of yesterday, I didn't appreciate really fully how impressive Carapaz was in the final part of the climb.
We didn't see him really, did we?
Didn't really see him. And because he was ahead of that Roglic-Nibali group, which the cameras were on a lot of the time. But Carapaz, the final 5 kilometres of the climb was the quickest by a long way, 16 minutes, 15 seconds. I mean, that was a minute and 20 quicker than Roglic and Nibali. And so he's taking a minute out of these guys on these climbs quite easily. And there are a lot of climbs still to come. And it does appear that, you know, you mentioned last night, Daniel Pantani in 98. And you do feel that whenever the road goes up, Carapaz has this extra gear, he can jump away and claim time.
Yeah, and I do think that Roglic and Nibali have become a bit preoccupied with what each other is doing and this phony war that's gone on at least for the last 24 hours. Who knows, there might be a bit of a truce now, be united by a common goal. But I think Roglic rode today like as though he's the leader of the race, or was the virtual leader of the race. I don't think he is that anymore.
No, I mean, Carapaz, really, it was a mauling today, wasn't it? He was 1 minute 54 ahead of Nibali, Mika, Landa, Lopez, Sivakov, Roglic and Dombrowski, the kind of wild card in that group. 1 minute 54, how often do you see a potential GC rider, bear in mind he was fourth in the Giro last year, take that sort of time? All right, you're going to say Chris Froome last year, of course.
But if he hadn't lost the time in the time trials, we'd be looking at a runaway leader at the moment, wouldn't we? And we'd be asking, how can he be beaten?
And the difference is, they won't have been unaware of the danger. So it wasn't like they were asleep on the job today. They didn't react because it was from quite a long way out. And Carapaz did well on the descent to hold the gap. And then when he climbed again, he was giving it absolutely everything all the way to the line. I think he was, you know, sprinting out of the saddle until he got to the line. He only put his arms up after the line. So he clearly wasn't just going for his second stage win of the race. He was going to gain as much time as possible. Yes, it was close for the jersey today, only 7 seconds, but that applies pressure to Roglic, because tomorrow maybe not, but then the big stage on Tuesday, even if the Gavia, as seems very likely, is not going to be passed.
Well, Napalm, press conference is taking place right now. Mara Venu, the race director, is giving a press conference. We are 99% certain that this is to announce the Gavia has been removed from the route because of snow, and there's going to be a bit of a rejig to the route. We think they're going to go over the Aprica climb and then go straight onto the Mortirolo. So it's still going to be a very hard stage.
And it will suit Carapaz, won't it?
Yeah, this question of altitude would have been maybe an interesting one if the Gavi had still been on the route, 2,600 metres. A couple of people have suggested that the different riders will come to the fore, or different riders would have come to the fore over 2,000 metres. But, you know, Carapaz born at 3,000 metres.
Well, at the finish, I spoke to Max Chiandri again. We spoke to him yesterday after Movistar appeared to be one of the big winners yesterday, because both Canapaz and Landa gained time, even bigger winners today. And I wanted to find out from Max just how much of that was planned and what sort of person Carapaz is, because we don't know an awful lot about him. Max Chiandri joined Movistar at the start of this season, been at BMC Racing for quite a long time. As we know, he's quite a sort of laid back character, isn't he? But he had some quite interesting things to say about Movistar's tactics, particularly when I asked him about, you know, the perception that when Valverde and Quintana are riding Grand Tours for Movistar, they try this tactic of sending people up the road, as they have done the last couple of days, and then bridging across and trying to gain time that way. And it never seems to work. And then the two big guns, Valverde and Quintana, don't quite have the explosivity to really turn the screw on their rivals. Kind of the complete opposite here with Landa and Canapaz, who seem to have no difficulty opening gaps and maintaining gaps.
They look like a more dynamic team, don't
they? Much more dynamic, yeah. And I wanted to ask a little bit about that. So this is Max Chiandri talking at the finish. You were the big winners yesterday, but even bigger winners today. The pink jersey now in the team.
Well, yeah. Actually, the plan was... The plan was to, you know, be a little bit conservative till the race did not establish kind of, you know, we wanted to know what was going to happen, especially on the first climb, just, you know, because these short stages are pretty crazy. We knew that Nibali was going to give it a good shot in every way. Yeah, with rain maybe on the descent, it didn't happen, but, you know, he tried, I think, everywhere as much as he could. And then the second thing was to look for opportunities if the chance came, you know, and... chance came, and Richard was really anxious. This morning we actually looked at the final run into Courmayeur here, and right at the bottom of the descent there's this 3k, and I said this can be the point, you know, where we can make the difference if we're like 10 15 20 guys or less. Bottom of the descent where it all twisted, because sometimes you come down these descents, so the climb is full gas, descent is full gas, you hit the last climb, or 6 7k to get here, but the first 3k, well, 3.5k, 5.5 to 6%. We really looked at it this morning with Richard, with Carapaz, and I said to him, listen, if there's a point you want to try, this could be it. But he just like started way earlier and put himself, you know, over the climb, and 3.5k to go. I was actually on the microphone to Chente, was in front saying, I want to try, and he just went, and that was it, you know. And then we knew that once Ian over the top, and we got to this 3.5k where we said, you know, when we get there, then it's like you pull, no, I pull, and blah blah blah, and everything, and the gap just opened, boom, and it went to nearly 2 minutes.
We saw the stats from the last 5 kilometers of yesterday's stage,
yeah,
and Carapaz was the quickest. I mean, does that give
I talked to him about it, so, but I knew, I followed him in the TT in San Marino, and I said, listen, Richard, on the climb you're the fastest. Okay, Roglic came in and he did the best. But, you know, as days go by, hopefully people go up and people go down. That's all I can say, you know. So we knew even from yesterday that, you know, as if he's out there and can climb, he is the strongest, or one of the top three, I'd say, you know. So, yeah, I saw that as well, and we talked about it.
I mean, you're right in the race now. Obviously, you've got the jersey. But in a funny way, have you sort of done Jumbo-Visma a favour, because they're still well positioned, but they don't have to necessarily do as much? You're going to have to take this on a bit now. No?
Yeah, for sure. We got some hard stuff coming up. You know, even tomorrow, stage in Como is going to be pretty tough stuff. But you know, we still got Mikel, what's fifth, I think, now in GC or around there. We got the jersey. We're in the race. You know, yeah, we got responsibilities. We got work to do, but that's what we're here for.
And altitude's no problem for Canapaz, is it? He's from very high.
Over 2,000, that's when he kicks in, I think.
What can you tell me about him? Because we don't know an awful lot about Canapaz.
Well, I'm a bit like you, you know, new in this team, so but we kind of acquaintance really quickly, you know. I follow him in the TTs opening and that, you know. We just... I in the morning, you know, when we go through the meeting, I just make sure that he's looking at the iPad. So I sit, I'm right next to him where he's, I'm double checking that he's on the course. He hasn't done much recon or hardly nothing, so I just want to make sure that he knows what's going to expect him in the day. And
a quiet guy, confident
super
guy.
Quiet guy. I mean, what really struck me was down in, can't remember, and I hear this voice, por favor, tengo frío. And he wants his jacket. You know, it's like, oh, Jesus, this guy's like, please, can I get a jacket?
When was the last time a rider said, please, can I get
never.
A jacket?
Never. When I come from before, it was like, bring me the jacket now. And so, yeah, no, he's a good, you know, I mean, obviously now he's in pink and he's the best friend of everybody, but I'm just, you know, new in the team, he's doing good, we're happy, and let's see what's going to happen the next days.
Lastly, we've been quite critical of Movistar when they've had Valverde and Quintana. You know, they often try this tactic of putting people up the road and trying to bridge across. That never seems to work, and sometimes when push really comes to shove, they seem to be quite defensive. But here, the total opposite. Is it the personnel? Is it the riders want to get stuck in?
You know, I don't want to say, but last night I came to the table, a lot of guys said, cheers to the new director. I don't want to say me, but I really work on balancing out the team. For me, it's like when you're working in a happy environment, how much more do you give? You know, how much happier can you be? How many things can come to together? You know, this is what we're doing here. So this is what I try to do.
The Cycling Podcast at the Giro d'Italia is supported by Science in Sport. Science in Sport, fueled by science.
Thank you very much to Science in Sport for sponsoring the Cycling Podcast. If you'd like to be in with a chance of winning a nutrition bundle from Science in Sport and some Rafa kit, all you have to do is follow the Cycling Podcast on Instagram and share the latest episode in your Instagram story. We'll announce a winner on the second rest day on Monday. On the second rest day, you two, Richard, Daniel, will be doing the press conference. Please send in your questions for that and we'll do our best to answer as many as we possibly can. The way to ask a question is to send a voice memo to our WhatsApp number, which is +44 797 133 8205. You can also find that number in our Twitter bio. Send us a question about the Giro and you guys can answer as many as you can on the rest day.
And back briefly to Science and Sport, you can of course get 25% off if you're in the UK, scienceandsport.com with the code SISCP25. They've also got a Giro bundle, Science and Sport, which is worth £55 but is available for £35. You will not be able to use your code to get an additional 25% off that, but it's a very very good value. So sciencesupport.com for all your sports nutrition. Daniel, you were following up a very interesting story at the start this morning that we've been following on the Cycling Podcast.
We called it Operation Andalas, not to be
confused
with Operation Adalas. Andalas is not.
So Adalas is the letting of blood. Andalas is the letting of urine.
Yeah, that was the hypothesis that we formulated. This was the story about Bauke Mollema 2 days ago. We heard that he was going to relieve himself. That's my favourite euphemism. I'm sticking with it. Before the Montorzo climb, to try and kind of warm up his engine. We didn't believe this was actually going to happen. It did happen, extraordinarily. And 3 days into this developing story now, I spoke to him about it this morning.
But that was just something that was in my mind, and I was not even sure I was going to do it. And well, I stopped once to pee, and then I just did a small effort, but it was just a few minutes. So I think it's a bit, I mean, the story got bigger than it was.
So inconclusive. Is it something you'll do again?
Well, maybe in some other day when it's the whole day flat, but yeah, we don't have complete flat days anymore this Giro. So when it's a hard day and a hard start, normally that's a little bit better for me. Yeah, I like also this kind of days, just 150 kilometers flat and then one climb in the final, I might have some problems. But yeah, luckily that's not the case anymore this Giro.
Took that quite seriously, didn't he, chaps?
Well, he's a serious man, isn't he, Bauke Mollema?
Very, very aptly in the Val d'Aosta. I don't know whether it was serious, doesn't have to be negative, but Val d'Aosta has the highest suicide rate of all the Italian regions. And
why?
There was a study last year which showed that the Val d'Aosta has the highest proportion of negative tweets of any Italian region.
Really?
So, you know, can you look around you, Lionel? Can you see why?
Why
people are feeling, you know,
closed in, maybe.
Glum and morose here.
Closed in by the mountains, maybe? I don't know.
Yeah.
Split identity. Don't know whether they're French
or
Italian.
We closed in last night in our accommodation, didn't we?
Oh, my word. That is another story, though. Wow. Are we gonna talk about
that
this?
That was up there with the police raid on our hotel in Assisi last year.
It was up there with the night that Simon, the photographer, and I on the Vuelta ended up in a very remote place where there was a bat in my bedroom, and the man who was preparing our dinner and sat and watched us eat dinner at really quite close quarters while the song Hallelujah in various versions, including the Leonard Cohen original, played on a loop on the TV screen in the dining room. Well, last night was almost as weird.
There were questionable politics. There was a handgun being brandished and invitations extended to go and hunt pheasants at 6 o'clock in the morning. Talk of orgies.
Oh, we were invited into it was a lovely place, wasn't it? It was very, you know,
we
well
won't reveal the identity.
No, it was very
or the location.
It was, you know, it was very well appointed. The bedrooms were nice. I mean, it was an old mill, wasn't it? And a lot of that had been preserved. Clearly, he was very proud of his place. But basically, we ate dinner with the proprietor at his little round kitchen table in his own personal kitchen, watching some
Berlusconi TV, wasn't it?
Pretty dubious television. I mean, if we talk, I mean, not even sure I can convey accurately.
Save it for your Giro diary, Lionel.
But we were served quite a nice meal on plastic plates. I mean, it just got weirder and weirder, didn't it?
Anyway, the great
shame is...
My favourite moment was the text message that we both received this morning, Lionel, which said, "Let me know when you're at breakfast. I'm too scared to go on my own."
Which I was. Which I was.
Anyway,
the great shame is we could have stayed there two nights running, but we're not.
No, it's not a shame. Back to the racing, yes. Fellas. What else happened today? I mean,
well, Mollema, as I said, paid probably for his efforts yesterday, and backing up when they have three of the stages like this in a row, and then tomorrow, not high mountains, but a kind of little, not even that little. Il Lombardia, is it? It goes over the Gisallo climb from Il Lombardia. There's another second category climb,
Colma di Sormano.
So it's going to be, it could be ambush territory for somebody, couldn't it? Somebody could.
Yeah. There won't be much action, I don't think, until late in the race, but it'll be a very intense last 50 kilometres.
Yeah, twisty, turny, narrow in places, I guess. Well, if it's, you know, we know those roads from Il Lombardia, a lot of them. So, but this thing of backing up over what has been quite an interesting 4 days, the rhythm of it has been really interesting. A short, hard day, a long, hard day, a short, hard day, and then a long, hard day. And that got to be deliberate, the length of the stages particularly, and the fact that yesterday was a very long uphill finish and today was a shorter, punchier uphill finish. It's testing the riders, and caught a couple out today, and that is why the Polish rider Rafał Majka of Bora Hansgrohe was understandably happy at the finish, because he's navigated his way through these four stages and he's made small gains here and there. He's moved himself up to fourth place overall, which when I spoke to him he was not quite aware of. Rafa, you're up to fourth overall. This Giro is a long way from finished.
Fourth
overall.
It's not so bad, no? No, I'm happy, and yeah, I'm also happy that today is not raining. This is what I like, when it's really warm, and especially in this final like this, a lot of descent, hard descent, and we don't want to risk no crash and have good luck. But still, it's 1 week really hard.
This has been three really hard days. I mean, are you pleased that you've got through without faltering?
No, I don't want to spend so much energy, because we know then it's like the last week should be really, really hard. And also in the climb, I a little bit drop it, but I take my my rhythm, and I back the last 1.5K to make, because otherwise when I go over pacing like so many guys like Zakarin, Mollema, Yates, and yeah, maybe Yates in the end is come back, but yeah, we try the best.
And what about the morale in the team with the stage wins for Ackermann, stage win for Benedetti? Does that pass to you, even though you're in the climbing half of the team?
No, it's okay. We have really nice time. For us, it's more easy. You know, we win three stages, and yeah, now we fight for the GC.
So that was Rafał Majka putting together a really good Giro, isn't he? And the surprise package among the leaders today, really probably Joe Dombrowski, who's put together two really strong days, and you know, as we'll hear in a moment, because I spoke to him at the finish, he's been brilliant in flashes in his professional career. He's shown on occasions what he's capable of. He, a former Baby Giro winner, of course, and great things were expected of him, and he hasn't really delivered in the senior ranks. But these 2 days have been his best ever days, really, in his pro career. So spoke to Joe Dombrowski at the finish. He's moved up to 15th overall. He was 9th on the stage, and he was there with the GC contenders, so he was pretty pleased.
You're obviously able to speak.
Actually, I know this is going to sound like pretentious, but the final was pretty easy. It was the last climb because we had a headwind. So it's like Nibali had Caruso, so I have no reason to really do anything in that group. It was pretty much just sitting on, but felt good on, well, I didn't feel good on the climb, but you don't notice it on TV, but someone opens up one bike length, and when you're pegged on a climb like that, like just closing 1 meter can kind of kill you. And then they started attacking each other, maybe 2-3K from the top, and I'm not really able to follow those guys when they accelerate, so I figured, oh, I'll just ride my pace, and if I can at least make it back by the top, which I did, then hopefully I can do the downhill with them, and then they accelerate again. And
something you said to us, or you certainly were saying a couple of years ago, was, you know, you can go for a stage win, you can be there in the break one day and contend for a stage win, but being there day after day with the GC guys, you thought that was beyond you. I mean, have these 2 days made you think that, you know, maybe you've improved or that you're now capable of doing that?
My biggest personal goal this year was just being more consistent. The last couple of years, I haven't had great seasons, and it's like every now and again I'd knock out a good ride, but it was like, oh, where'd that come from, you know? So the first 12 days, I think I did a pretty good job. I mean, I only had one little crash that I got caught up in, but otherwise was always in front of the splits. And for me, I did a decent TT around, I guess for Yates and Lopez, they'd say they did a bad TT, but if I finish around them, then I would say for me, that's okay. The only time I've really not been there was the first day we went uphill. I just didn't have it, and I was dropped pretty early on. I had my eye a little bit on the GC coming in because it's like, oh, well, I haven't lost any time. And these last week normally suits me quite well, especially as backloaded as this one is. But then I thought after that day, like, if I'm already dropped with 40 riders, I'm not gonna be there.
So that was Joe Dombrowski, who, of course, 3 years ago, was it, kept an audio diary for the cycling podcast. Quite offbeat it was. He rode a good race that year as well, actually. Came quite close to a stage win on the penultimate day.
Finished 34th, and his GC results have kind of gone backwards a bit from
there. He's had two really disappointing seasons, as he mentioned. But, you know, this is a big year for him, I think. And the ride that he's doing here at the Giro, and I expect that he will be pretty good in the last week. He's tended to be good in the final week in Grand Tours. So if his condition's good, then I think he'll be good. So they're kind of riding a strange race, EF Education first, aren't they? They've got Hugh Carthy, Kangert as well, Tanel Kangert, who's joined from Astana over the winter. It's been pretty good signing for them. He's also up there, so they're kind of there and thereabouts, but without a really clear focus.
They're also a team that I think could at some point have quite a big impact on the general classification, because we already saw it on the day where we finished in Pinerolo, where there were three of the EF Education first riders in the chasing group, and they made a big difference to that chase, and they stopped Landa and Superman gaining more time. And that could well happen again, because they've got three guys who are climbing well: Carthy, Dombrowski, and Kangert. And not many teams can say that they've got three guys in that kind of condition.
Well, they're 14th, 15th, and 17th overall, and you know, you wouldn't bet against one or more of them moving up a little bit. But they're in that kind of, they're in that zone where they will be allowed a little bit of leeway, won't they? Because 11, 12, and 14 minutes down, they're not going to be an immediate threat. And as we see in the last week, when those breaks go, particularly when the big breaks go with sort of 20 riders in, you'd expect to see, you know, a couple of them make those breaks, and yeah, who knows, maybe a stage win for one of them.
Talking of willowy climbers, Rich, Sivakov had another good ride for Ineos, didn't he?
When I spoke to him at the finish yesterday, he was quite sceptical about his chances of holding onto that white jersey with Spider-Man breathing down his neck. I've changed it to Spider-Man because he's always sort of clawing his way back now. He's not soaring out of the group, is he? He's actually clawing his way back.
I discovered today that he is Richard Carapaz's fishing buddy.
Really?
They go on fishing trips together.
Well, that was one good thing about this place we stayed last night. The trout in the river
were sublime, weren't they?
They were huge. They were huge. I don't know what they'd been fed.
You were just grabbing them out of the river with your bare hands and just tearing the head off with your teeth.
Eating them.
Extraordinary.
Oh, yeah. I wonder whether our host, he was a bit of a poacher, wasn't he? I wonder how many of those are in his freezer. Anyway.
Anyway, they were amazing.
35 seconds
fish.
Between Sivakov and Lopez in the white jersey race. And that could be quite a keen race because... Well, Sivakov is looking good, isn't he?
Sivakov looks very, very good.
Do you ever get the feeling that Superman will still be eligible for the white jersey in 2033?
I mean, Sivakov is 4 years younger than him, you know, and I was surprised to learn that he was still eligible for the young rider's jersey. But Sivakov, you know, there's going to be a point where he realizes that actually he belongs in that company and he's capable of contending at least for that. I spoke to Dave Brailsford this morning at the start, and he said that Tim Kerrison reckons that Sivakov is the best athlete he's ever worked with. Now, Tim Kerrison has not only worked with cyclists, but also, of course, you know, world record breaking swimmers. And that's quite a claim for a 21-year-old, but we haven't seen many 21-year-olds hold their own in that sort of company, have we? And there's something about him, I think. He looks good. You were talking the other day in the press conference about how I kind of place a high value on the aesthetics of certain riders, but he looks like a kind of injuring type on the climbs. He's very smooth. He's tall, he's big, he's got quite long legs, but he looks very comfortable, and just like he's got all the kind of raw ingredients to make a great rider.
I also spoke to Dave Brailsford this morning, Rich, about Sivakov and also about Mikael Landa, who's a rider who Brailsford knows well, having managed him at Team Sky, and what kind of threat he's going to pose over the next few days.
Well, I think like we said from the get-go, you know, we came here with a young group of very talented riders, and the idea was to explore exactly that, you know, and I think to try and... the first part of the race was a relatively, from a GC point of view, you know, it's a relatively uneventful kind of first phase of the race. So trying to encourage the guys to ride and, you know, do all the right things, save their energy, ride GC, felt, I think, like a really long time for them. But then they've started to reap the rewards of that. So how far can he go? We don't know. What he has done is done brilliantly. So he's over, he's exceeded expectations so far. And if he keeps doing, you know, they're all the small things, fueling, listen to the guys, riding tactically very well, pacing himself well, not getting too carried away, then the exciting thing is to see how long into, just what's the duration of the performance that he can hold at 21 years old. I mean, it's phenomenal what he's doing already. So, you know, whether he can hold it for the whole 3 weeks or not, let's see. But he's going to learn from it, and that's what, like we said right at the start, that's what we're here to do. I think when you're 21, you know, on your way up, there's big improvements to be made across the board. But he's a super guy. I mean, he really is. He takes it very seriously, but he's got a great sense of humour. He's got a nice approach to the whole, to sort of life sporting balance, really. He's a very conscientious and dedicated young man. And, you know, he speaks multiple languages. He fits very well into the team. He's a pleasure to work with. He listens, he learns. And it's just, on a personal note, it makes it a really, really enjoyable experience.
Mikael Landa's gained time the last 2 days. People look at him as a kind of loose cannon, could be brilliant, could be terrible. How worried should the other contenders be about Landa now?
There's no doubt about it. He's one of the most gifted riders in the sport. And, I mean, he's beautiful on a bike, isn't he? Aesthetically, he's probably... Oh, when he goes and does what he did yesterday, it's just a joy to watch. It's, and if he can reproduce that and hold it together, then he's a real threat, I'd say. You know, he's got the ability. It's more about his tenacity, resilience psychologically, I think, more than anything else. But Mikael's the type of guy, I think, when he gets, you know, he gets the wheel on somebody else, he gets, you know, a little bit ahead. I think it puts him in a very, very good position, and I think he'll be on the up. He'll be feeling very, very positive, and I think he's a threat.
So, chaps, that was Brailsford on Sivakov. I expected Sivakov to go well in this stage because he told me earlier in the week he was looking forward to it. He's won the Giro della Valdosta, the very prestigious stage race in this region, in his last year as an amateur. Another little thing that cropped up today relating to the Giro della Valdosta. The descent off the Colle San Carlo was, I think it was pretty dicey. I don't think anyone crashed, any one of the main contenders. I didn't realise until today that in 1993, a rider, Diego Pellegrini, had died on that descent in the Giro della Valdosta. And there is there's kind of a stone, a memorial there for him on the descent.
Did you notice who Dave Brailsford was with at the start this morning. He was wandering around with somebody.
I noticed that he was with someone. I didn't know who it was.
That was Hugh Brasher, who is the director of the London Marathon, Ride London. His father was Chris Brasher, Olympic gold medalist, steeplechaser, also one of the pacemakers for Roger Bannister when he broke the 4-minute mile.
I wonder if he knows Patrick Conrad's dad, who is the director of the Vienna Marathon.
Interesting, probably. Anyway, Hugh Brasher was here spending a couple of days with Team Ineos, and when I was speaking to him about, he was talking about Kipchoge's attempt on the 2-hour marathon record. He's trying to break the 2-hour barrier for the marathon sometime quite soon. And we've heard a couple of rumours that Dave Brailsford might be involved with this.
Cause I thought you were going to say Dave Brailsford was also going to go for the 2-hour marathon then.
Well, it's an Ineos-backed project, this. And, you know, Ineos are clearly building this kind of sporting empire, and there have been rumours that Brailsford might be involved in more than just the cycling team. So seeing Hugh Brasher there today spending some time with Team Ineos did add some fuel to those rumours, perhaps, but we must ask him about that. Any other business? I mean, it's been a difficult couple of days for the guys at the back of the race, obviously, and Conor Dunn, we've seen the giant Conor Dunn from Israel Cycling Academy. His second Grand Tour, I think he's in a much better frame of mind in this one than in the Vuelta a couple of years ago, where it was a real struggle for him right from week one. Here, he seems, even if it's just as hard physically, he seems in better spirits. And I spoke to him at the finish after he came in with the Gruppetto.
You had a tough day yesterday. How was today?
Oh, it's absolutely grim. Really worse than yesterday. I had, like, it's a tough day obviously, but I just had a stinker of a day too. Oh, my back was in bits. I could, like, it was like someone was stagging a knife in there. And I was, like, on the ropes actually all day. First one to be dropped on the first climb of the day. And I was, like, really had to really dig in and just ride my own rhythm. Fought back into the Damar group. And then just had to suffer the rest of the day.
Not helped both days by the fact it's been really aggressive racing.
Yeah, like I knew the race would go from the front. I wasn't too worried about that. Normally when I feel good, I know I can get around these days in the time cut okay. You can just ride your own tempo and normally right. But today I was like actually really swinging. After 40k I was like, this is going to be tough.
How are you finding this compared to the Vuelta? Because we spoke to you a lot of the Vuelta a couple of years ago.
The Vuelta was kind of like just solid the whole way through, I think. Just like real tough the whole way. Whereas the Giro has been like super easy. A few hard days, but easy. And now it's just like wallop at the end. I feel a bit mentally stronger this time. So like I don't lose my head as much. But physically it's still the same. Like you can't get over it. It's going to hurt.
But you're going to be in the break tomorrow.
I said I would, so pressure's on. I need like some sort of Chinese like ninja to just give me this massage on my back and then hopefully I'll be better.
We'll let you get on, get a shower and get changed, and good luck tomorrow.
Yeah, thanks a lot. Cheers.
So that was Conor Dunn. Look out for him in the break tomorrow. Is tomorrow's stage similar-ish to the one that Bob Jungels won a couple of years ago in Bergamo? Or maybe
stages
a bit harder.
Bergamo, always same area. Relatively similar. There was a similar one that Konstantin Siutsu won, I think back in 2009. I mean, you go from the plain into the sort of foothills of the Alps when you go to Bergamo or Como. So, you know, climbs of sort of 4 to 10 kilometres, some of them quite steep. The final climb tomorrow, the Civiglio, is one that features often in Lombardy. And I think we'll see some selection amongst the contenders for overall victory.
I wonder if after a couple of really hard GC days, we'll see a bit of a truce maybe between those guys, and it might be Jungels or, you know, one of those.
I think Simon Yates will go for it.
Simon Yates, yeah, somebody like that. What do you think, Lionel?
I'm not sure about a truce. I don't know whether that's... No, I can't see it really, because there's still people who want to make up time. There's still, you know, danger lurks out there, and there's a rest day on Monday, and this hard block, you know, there might be opportunities tomorrow if somebody decides to make it hard. I mean, you know, if you were Movistar and Landa's feeling good, why not try and upset the apple cart even further and just put Roglic on the back foot. And the best way to defend the jersey is to go on the attack, especially when the lead is only 7 seconds. So I don't know. I think having sort of seen such a kind of dull and uneventful opening 9 or 10, 11 days of the race, the last 3 days have, you know, really shown that the riders are keen to race, and now the terrain gives them those opportunities. So I wouldn't be surprised if there was a big surprise tomorrow.
Been a cracking couple of days. Before we go, just a reminder that the second and final batch of the Cycling Podcast Giro mugs will go on sale on Sunday. These have been made by Stacey Snyder, the ceramicist in the US. They will raise money for Ride for Charlie and the Kelly Catlin Fund, and they will be available at 3 o'clock Central European time. That's Italian time. That's 2 o'clock in the UK, 9 o'clock in the morning US East Coast time. We did have a tweet from somebody in Australia. It's not a great time for the Australians, sorry about that, but it's hard to please everybody. But do try and get a mug if you'd like one quickly, because they sold out very quickly on day one when they first went on sale. Go to etsy.com/shop/Snyder Ceramics. That's Snyder Ceramics. And yeah, we've enjoyed seeing some of your pictures. Those of you who've been lucky to get a mug have been sending us pictures or posting them on social media. That's been nice to see. And they have raised and will raise a lot of money for these two good causes. So thank you very much for that. And that's all for us from tonight. What kind of hotel have you got in store for us tonight,
well,
Daniel?
I don't think there'll be anyone shooting partridges with a Smith & Wesson, unlike last night. Hopefully, anyway.
No orgies.
No orgies, no bunga bunga parties, although, you know, we're getting close to Milan.
Will we have proper cutlery and plates? That's what I'm most concerned
priorities
about.
Priorities here. Okay, let's wrap up. Thank you, Lionel.
Thank you, Richard.
Thanks, Daniel.
Thank you.
Se lo mangiano le femmine.